Brew Strong is brought to you by morebeer.com, where a man can brew like a man.
Brewers, it's time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters. Another
fine
episode of Brew Strong here with my good buddy, John Palmer.
And, howdy.
I am Jamil Zainashev, and we are talking in the third hour of our Water Genza, which is
water.
We're talking about one of the most important ingredients in a beer. You know, it's 90-some-odd percent of what makes up a beer. And as John talked about in the very first episode of the Water Genza, it really can make the difference between a very good beer and an excellent beer. You know, a beer that places third place and a beer that places first place. This is, you know, the fine-tuning. Once you've kind of mastered the basics of the brewing process and you've got your fermentation down, your pitching rates and all that, and your sanitation dialed in, this is how you take that extra step. This is how you get to making, you know, really outstanding beers. And what I think a lot of people find is that, you know, they've been brewing for a while, and they're very good brewers. And you'll see this in, you know, in the National Homebrew Competition. You'll see that people will do well in certain styles year in and year out. And in other styles, they just can't seem to brew a really great beer, an award-winning beer in those styles. And I think that boils down to water and, you know, what their local water is right, or, you know, what
That's
kind
right.
of adjustments they tend to do. I mean, you have any other thoughts on that, John? Am I out the
no,
lunch
that's,
here?
That's exactly right. I mean, I've talked with dozens of brewers that have that, you know, that seeming handicap. He says, "Oh, you know, I'm great at pale ales. My stouts never turn out, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. I can't brew a pale beer. You know, my dark beers are good, but I can't brew a pale beer." Mm-hmm. And it's the limitation of the water they're working with.
Right. Right. Yeah, I think that it has an impact. And, you know, you can take almost any water and brew a very good beer with it. And you can brew award-winning beer with almost any water, you know, right out of your tap. You just strip the chlorine out, maybe boil it, whatever. And, you know, you can make a very good beer. You can make certain adjustments, and you could, you know, treat your mash with lactic acid or what have you, get the right pH, and then, you know, you can make an excellent beer. But especially in certain styles like, you know, Munich Helles, American Light Lager, those very simple styles where, you know, it's just, you know, one kind of malt, you know, that's where water adjustment really, you know, rears its head. And you can tell the difference in beers depending on that water adjustment. And I'd say almost the same is true for something like a dry stout. That's another real popular beer with people starting out to brew because it's a very simple recipe, dry stout. It's basically pale malt and roasted barley. And the flake barley, you know, whatever. But it's a real simple recipe for you know, something like Guinness. And the difference comes in making sure you have the right alkalinity to hardness balance to give you the right profile of the beer.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to do in this episode is we're going to walk you through, or John's going to walk you through these, you know, taking a kind of understand. I'd appreciate if you do a couple things for us, John.
Sure.
If you could help us understand a water report and what we'd be looking at, and when we see what, should we say, "Oh, screw it, I'm going to go with distilled water," or "Hey, I'm not that bad off, a little tweaks and I could do all this? You know, that kind of thing. How do I read that report? How do I understand it? How do I kind of make a decision about what I need to do? And then once I made that decision, what tools should I use to make my calculations? And then walk me through a recipe and exactly what I do at what time and throw it in and give me some sense. If you do all that in this hour, I think you'd be a god to more people than you're already a god to.
I will even surprise myself.
There you go. Well, and also I wanted to mention our fine sponsor, morebeer.com. The guys at More Beer are very supportive of everything we're doing here at the Brewing Network, and them sponsoring us makes you know, this kind of content available. And you know, it's not just anywhere you can get 3 hours of an expert's time kind of filling you in, giving you education on something like water, which is a tricky subject. So my kudos to morebeer.com and the fine guys down there. All right, John, start me off with what did I say to start me off with?
Well, how does style enter into this, I guess?
Okay.
And as we said the first there, you know, you've got light beers and you've got dark beers, and often people can brew one, you know, group of styles well and not the other. You know, they can brew either dark styles well or light styles well, and that's due to the water they're starting with, what the residual alkalinity of their water is. Mm-hmm. If their water residual alkalinity is in the minus 60 to 0 range, that's good for pale beers.
And,
if it's in,
and I can find this on the – my municipality sends me a water report like once a quarter, or maybe twice a year, something like that. And it has all these numbers, pages and pages of numbers and averages of what water they push through the pipes. And so you're saying this residual alkalinity I can find in that report.
Almost.
Okay.
What you can find in the report is you should be able to find your calcium parts per million, your magnesium parts per million, and your total alkalinity as calcium carbonate.
Okay.
Sometimes you'll see your bicarbonate concentration, but really the total alkalinity that's the most useful number.
Okay.
If you don't see calcium parts per million, you just see like total hardness as calcium carbonate. You can kind of estimate what your calcium is and your magnesium is by assuming that your calcium to magnesium ratio is about 3 to 1 or 4 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see, you know, calcium at or total hardness as calcium carbonate as 50, you know, go through the conversions in chapter 15 of my book to say, you know, pretend that all of that is calcium, and that'll give you a number of about, say, 40 parts per million calcium. And then of that 40, estimate that it's about 10 parts per million is magnesium. And that'll get you in the ballpark.
Okay. And just so everybody knows, the book you're talking about is How to Brew. It's one of the seminal tomes on brewing from start to expert level. And you can get it available. I think they're signed copies in the Brewing Network store, thebrewingnetwork.com.
That's right.
You pick up a copy of that. John gets like 2 cents, and the Brewing Network makes some money off of that, and it helps support the programming. So if you don't have it, it's an excellent book. I give it as gifts to friends who are interested in brewing, and you should have a copy if you don't. All right. So chapter 15 has that advice in it, right?
Yeah. Chapter 15 is where I go into all this residual alkalinity and water for all grain brewing, where I really break it down to the nuts and bolts like we're talking today.
Okay.
In your water report, you want to look for calcium, magnesium, and total alkalinity.
Mm-hmm.
You also want to look for your sulfate and your chloride, because that'll give you, you know, an estimate of what the flavor profile of the final beer will be, and help you adjust those.
And we talked in, I think it was episode 1 of the Water Gans about the ratio of the chloride to the sulfite affecting the bittering to the malty kind of balance.
Right, right. So use these three mineral levels, calcium, magnesium, bicarbonate, or total alkalinity, to calculate your residual alkalinity for your water. And then you can go to the nomograph in my book, in the back of the book, or you can go to my spreadsheet online. I forget what the name of the spreadsheet is, but it's on howtobrew.com in chapter 15. Or you just do a general search and you'll find it. But anyway, from that residual alkalinity, you can look at the nomograph, or you can use the spreadsheet to estimate what color range of beer styles will best fit that water. And that's what I'm saying, where if your residual alkalinity is in the minus 60 to 0 range, that water is best suited for pale beers, you know, golden yellow to light amber. If it's in the 0 to 120 range, then you're good for the pale amber to dark amber to, you know, copper colors. If you're above 120 on up to 250, that's where you want to brew the brown ales and the porters and the stouts, because the amount of acidity those beer styles have in their dark malts will balance that extra alkalinity, the residual alkalinity that the water has. That's what the name of the game is balancing. You always want a mash pH in the 5.2 to 5.4 range at mash temperature and 5.4 to 5.8 range at room temperature, because the measured pH will differ due to temperature. And that's all explained in the book too. But the bottom line is that no matter what style you're brewing, you want your mash pH to always be in the mid-5s. And when you look at the nomograph, it can be confusing. And I've had people email me about this. They'll say, oh, I'm looking at the mash pH number on your nomograph against this residual alkalinity. So if I want to brew a stout, do I want to have a mash pH of 6? No, you don't. You always want your mash pH to be down in the mid-5s. What that pH scale is there for is it's saying, if you were brewing with two-row pale malt only, or Pilsner malt only, with your water that had a residual alkalinity of, say, 200, your mash pH would be 6 or 6.5. That's what the nomograph is saying, is that a base malt only mash with a high residual alkalinity water would have a high mash pH. To counter that high mash pH, you add dark malts to it. You don't brew a base malt only mash, and by using dark malts, you bring that mash pH down into the mid-5s where you want to be. Because that mash pH drives good conversion, and it drives good, you know, fermentation and other brewing reactions, and gives you the beer pH that you're looking for, that helps express the beer's flavors at the end.
Okay, so you know, for the people listening along, at what point do they look at the nomograph, look at the water report, and at what point do they say, well, I need to give up on my water and, you know,
good question,
cut it in half, or, you know, start with distilled, or, you know, what have you?
Yeah, if you live in Texas or Minnesota, well, okay, northern Minnesota, people there typically have high alkalinity water. And high alkalinity water is great for brewing stouts. But... you know, they'll have trouble brewing pale beers. So you don't necessarily want to give up, but you want to understand your playing field. You want to understand what your water is best suited for, and understand what you need to do to change it, to brew a different style. If you're in a high alkalinity area and you're trying to brew a pale beer, you can increase the hardness of the water with, you know, gypsum or calcium chloride additions in the mash. That will, I mean, typically, well, not, I shouldn't, the in some areas, you know, you'll have simply high alkalinity and low calcium and magnesium. So you can raise the calcium and magnesium levels to balance out that alkalinity.
So it's the ratio. It's not the total number necessarily, but the ratio that's
right.
Important.
Yeah. And you can, you know, you can brew, and I think that's where Dortmunder Export is a good example, say, compared to another German Pils or Munich Helles or Pilsner beer. You can have nearly the same color in a Czech Pilsner as you do in a Dortmunder Export, somewhere around, say, a five or a six beer color, which should be, 10 EBC. But you can, in a Pilsner beer, one that's brewed in Czechoslovakia, in Pilsen, you'll have a lower total mineral cap profile in that water than you do in Dortmund. That'll have a typically higher mineral profile, but the residual alkalinity of the waters is the same, and the beer color is the same. Now, the beers don't taste alike. That's a big difference. I mean, the beers don't taste the same, but you know, you've got the same color, and you get the same beer pH out of them.
Mm-hmm. So another option in adjusting, so in one case you're saying you can just adjust the ratio. And
yep.
it turns out you know, that'll work, but we're talking maybe the difference between a Dortmunder Export and you know, a German Pilsner, and that's
right.
Part of the influence there that makes that style that way. The other option is, of course, to take water with no minerals in it or very little minerals in it, like reverse osmosis or deionized
right.
or distilled
right.
water. And you add that to your tap water. Now, if I take 50% distilled water and 50% tap water, can I just assume that all the minerals and stuff are one half the level that they were before?
Yeah, generally.
Okay, so
it may be a little bit different, a couple percent, but generally it's half.
Good enough for brewing, right?
Right,
so,
right.
So you could take anything that you have and cut it, you know, by half or, you know, three quarters or whatever percentage you want to kind of dial into whatever levels. Assuming all your ratios are okay, then you'd mm-hmm. be all right to brew a pale ale. Is that what we're saying? Say you got stout water, and you
yeah.
add enough distilled water, and all of a sudden you can brew a German Pilsner.
Yeah, just about. I mean, again, it's a question of ratios, and you've cut your alkalinity in half, but you've also cut your hardness in half.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you'll probably want to do, especially in the case of a pale lager, is you may not have enough calcium left in that diluted water to get good flocculation and get good clarity. And, the fermentation might suffer a little bit compared to one where you had good calcium in it. So even when diluting water, I do recommend looking at your numbers and bringing up the calcium levels to at least 50 parts per million just to have good fermentation chemistry.
So there's certain minimums you want of the
yeah.
various minerals in order to have a good fermentation and proper flavor profile. If you use just distilled water overall, you end up with a pretty insipid beer, other than if you're
yes.
extract brewing, right?
Right. That's right. Yeah. And calcium is really the only requirement.
Okay.
If you're brewing a high adjunct beer, then you may want to add some magnesium too, if you're adding, you know, calcium to distilled water, because your magnesium will come from the malt. But if you're using a lot of, say, sugar adjuncts or something, you may want to increase the magnesium levels too to make sure the yeast get enough. But generally, calcium is the one you're mainly watching for.
Okay. All right, so let's take a short break, and when we get back, John, if you could walk us through brewing one of the recipes from Brewing Classic Styles as far as getting the right mineral profile. Back after this.
Right. Brew smart. Brew strong. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, Push, the new brewery's looking good.
Thanks, Finn. Piece by piece.
Well, let's fire her up. Whoa! Is that a new kettle?
Yeah, just got it brand new, but paid half price.
What? And that blade scale?
40% off.
The new tap handle?
$5 instead of 13. Got a new regulator for the brew stand, too, but $5 instead of 25.
Dude, where are you stealing all this stuff from?
Where else? The More Beer Deal of the Day.
Announcing the Beer, Beer, and More Beer Deal of the Day. Every day, a new fantastic deal from big items to small that will blow you away. Boil kettles, carboy carriers, sterile siphon starters, digital timers. Watch morebeer.com every day for a new deal, and you just might find the item you've been waiting for at a price you cannot believe. Hurry, because stock is limited on most items.
And that sweet Guinness cap, let me guess.
The More Beer Deal of the Day.
Yeah, I knew it. Come on, let's brew something. Find the More Beer Deal of the Day at morebeer.com. Celebrity voices impersonated.
Downtown Joe's, located in the historic Oberon Building in beautiful downtown Napa, California, offers an award-winning brew pub experience from 8:30 a.m. to 1 a.m. every day. For 15 years at the corner of 2nd and Main, Downtown Joe's has been voted Best Night Spot 7 times and Best Brew Pub for the last 4 years in a row. Brewmaster Colin Kaminsky's handcrafted ales, like his Tail Wagon Amber Ale and Catherine the Great Imperial Stout, are the perfect accent to riverside dining, live music, and a relaxing outdoor patio. Don't miss the Beer of the Month, special rotating taps, and happy hour all day Mondays. Visit downtownjoes.com to make reservations, peruse their extensive calendar of events, or just read more about their fantastic beers. Come enjoy the fine beer, food, and music. Downtown Joe's, the award-winning brew pub where you'll feel at home.
White Labs, your source for maltose mowing monsters, announces the White Labs Platinum lineup for 2009. Looking for out-of-the-ordinary yeast to make the best beer possible? The Platinum strains from White Labs are only available for a limited time and make your homebrew stand out. Through February, find Australian Ale, Essex Ale, and Dusseldorf Alt Yeast. March and April, it's Nottingham Ale, Abbey 4, and Mexican Lager Yeast. And May through June, don't miss Premium Bitter Ale, Belgian Wit 2, and Belgian Bastogne Ale Yeast. Keep up with all the great yeasts in the White Labs Platinum Program at whitelabs.com, where you can also join the White Labs Customer Club. Brew with the freshest and most unique yeast with the White Labs 2009 Platinum Strains. White Labs. It's all in the vial.
Ewa, what's it feel like?
Take awesome and multiply it by 2.
Yeah!
Spraying live beer radio all over your face.
Can't get any better than this, baby.
It's the Brewing Network. Back to your hosts, Jamil Zainasheff and John Palmer. Putting the testicles in technical. This is Brew Strong.
We're back. Part of our Water Genza. 3 episodes of water with my buddy John Palmer. You know, I went out to refill my pint glass with more of producer Chad's fantastic Shat-tastic beer. And he's asleep. He's got his laptop set up. He's listening to the show. He's like, oh, you guys are doing like 3 hours of water. He's like, oh, killer, I got to listen to this. So he sets up his laptop. He's out in the old lawn chair, snoozing away. So I snuck out there. I got another pint of his excellent beer.
I do it every time. Just put him right to sleep.
You know, the dulcet tones of your... I, you know, of all the people, I'm thinking, well, Yeah, his beer's freaking excellent already, so I guess he can go ahead and sleep through it. It really, that's okay in his case, you know. But he loves learning about everything about brewing, and he really wants to know all the reasons why you do specific things and what he could do to make his beer better. And that's one of the reasons he's such an excellent brewer. It's that kind of attention to detail and thirst for knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Now, does he brew dark beers very often?
I'd say he's pretty balanced. He brews pretty much everything.
Browns and porters he likes.
Okay. And I've had his pale beers, and those are always excellent.
All his beers are excellent. And I think the water here kind of lends itself to that. I think it's a
middle of the road kind of.
Middle of the road, and you can do fairly well on either end with this kind of water. It's impressive, and I think he does well. He does well. I'd say for everyone else out there listening, one of the things we wanted to do with this Waterganza is that you'd all get a good education on what water means to beer and what you need to do in order to make the water the best for the beer you're trying to brew. And, feel free to point your friends this way, too. Anytime, the conversation of water comes up, hopefully you can turn back to this and all the answers will be in here. If not, write those questions down, send them to us, and we'll do a fourth show in this series, and we'll get it all knocked out. We want to have all the information you need 100% defined and done and, one place to go for it. So that's our goal. If we'll probably fall short by some percent, hopefully not a lot. But whatever we do, we guarantee you we will answer those questions on the air. We'll make one great place to go for water. All right.
That's our hope,
walk me through how I build the water for, let's say, I'm looking to brew a Czech Pilsner, which,
that's where I was going to start.
All right.
Yeah.
Walk me through Czech Pilsner.
Yeah. I think using Brewing Classic styles, I'm going to walk everybody through four styles, Czech Pilsner, German Pilsner, Munich Helles, and Dortmunder Export, because those four styles illustrate the differences in water and the differences between styles of the same, of nearly the same color. In general, you can describe Czech Pilsner as a balanced beer in terms of its chloride to sulfate ratio and its maltiness to bitterness. It's a substantially bitter beer with the malt body to back it up. But it's known to be brewed with a very light mineral profile. Not a lot of minerals in the water. Everybody's heard that Pilsner water is darn near distilled. So in building water for Pilsen, I will go back to my general recommendation. Get your calcium up. Start out with distilled water, but build up the calcium level to at least 50. And the chloride to sulfate ratio you want to keep balanced, because you don't want the hops dominating. You don't want the malt dominating. You want it to be a fairly balanced beer. German Pils, on the other hand, is known to be a drier form of Pilsner beer. It has a little more, the edge of the balance is a little more to the bitter side.
Bitingly dry and substantially bitter. But I hate to interrupt, but let me go back to the Czech Pilsner. So you're saying not accentuating the bitterness as much and so the ratio of the water. How much adjustment can you make with ingredients to counter that? So could we back off on the bittering charge on that recipe just slightly and maybe get a similar result?
Potentially, but it depends on what what flavor you're looking for in the final beer. I mean, yeah, you could brew it with, I guess, you know, using just gypsum, calcium sulfate into distilled water, mm-hmm. get your calcium level up to about 50 parts per million. By doing so, you would have the chloride to sulfate ratio on the sulfate side. Mm-hmm. And so maybe you could reduce your IBUs by, mm-hmm. say, you know, 10% or something like mm-hmm. that. And to kind of even out that character a bit, you know.
You can come close.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be the same exactly.
Right.
The difference being when the calcium sulfite ratios are correct, you know, or if you're trying to accentuate bitterness and you're increasing your sulfates and you go, you know, you get a kind of a crisper, sharper taste to the hop bitterness.
Right.
You go the reverse, it's a softer, mellower hop bitterness. And, you know, you can certainly change the amount of bitterness you have in there, but the character of the bitterness comes through differently depending
on
the mineral ratios that you have. And that's why it's important to make that change. You can adjust and you can get close, but, again, that's the difference between, you know, the very best beers and the ones that are just shy of being the very best beers. I don't doubt that you could score 45 points without adjusting your water, but if you want to score 49, and nobody gives a 50 anymore, then you're going to need to tweak that water a little bit.
Yeah. And so if you're going to build water for a Pilsner, for a Czech Pilsner beer, I recommend building that water from a combination of gypsum and calcium chloride.
Mm-hmm.
So you get half of your calcium from the gypsum, the calcium sulfate, and get the other half from the calcium chloride. That way you keep your chloride to sulfate ratio balanced,
mm-hmm.
and you'll have a bitter beer, but it'll be a more mellow bitterness than the sharp bone dry bitterness of the German pils. Now the German pils, you're going to look at roughly the same amount of calcium in that water profile, but you're going to let more of the calcium come from gypsum calcium sulfate than you do from calcium chloride.
So your ratio to the sulfate is higher on the sulfate side than you would on the Pilsen beer.
Right. And in kind of building this water recipe, Munich, Germany, that, you know, area of Germany typically has a more of a medium level of mineral content than the Pilsen area. So I'd be looking, I would look for a target of calcium at say 65 to 75 parts per million calcium. You know, it's a little higher than 50. I could go with 50, or I could let it drift up to say 75. That's, you know, I'm in the ballpark for a German pils, and the you know, I'm a little over my minimum. But what I'm really looking for in terms of the character of the beer is the chloride to sulfate ratio, and I want that ratio to be on the sulfate side.
Mm-hmm.
Munich Helles, by contrast, you know, brewed in the same general region, you know, medium mineral content water. Again, you're looking for calcium levels in, you know, 50 to 70 range. But now you don't want the sulfate to dominate. You want the chloride to dominate. Munich Helles is a maltier pale beer, as opposed to the more bitter German pils. So you've got a softer, less bitterness Munich Helles, and to help that along, you building the same calcium level, you're using more calcium chloride than you do calcium sulfate.
Okay.
Dortmunder Export is a balanced beer. Generally, it's It's got a higher level of minerals overall. And I know you and I have talked. We feel that in terms of the style guidelines, maybe that gets overemphasized in terms of, you know, oh yeah, you got to use mineral water to brew the beer style with. Yeah, that is misleading. What you're looking for is you're looking for a residual alkalinity that supports the color of the beer at about a 4 to 6 SRM. I guess the style guideline is 4 to 6. So a little darker than, say, the German Pils or the Helles. But you want to have a balanced chloride to sulfate ratio, and you can go with higher calcium levels, and you can go with some bicarbonate to balance that higher calcium without detracting from the style. So in building water for a Dortmunder export, I'd probably go with about 200 parts per million calcium, 10, 20 parts per million of magnesium, 150 parts per million of total alkalinity, and then having the chloride to sulfate ratio balanced at about 100 parts per million for each.
Okay, and so you would calculate this out by grams, and the reason you use grams is because it's a little more fine,
a little more precise.
Precise than using ounces on most scales, anyways. Mm-hmm. And then if you can weigh to tenths of grams, it's that's fine, and a lot of the scales will do that. You would calculate this for the total your mash water plus the sparge water that's going to end up in the kettle, and that's
well. I would plan it in two steps.
You do your mash.
Addition, do the mash first,
and then you're going to do the addition for the additional water that ends up in the kettle.
Right,
and that will give you your total. Okay,
yeah. Especially when it comes to building up from distilled, mm-hmm. because really the only concern you have during sparging is you don't want to change the mash pH such that the mash pH rises to 6 and you get a lot of tannin extraction from your mash. Well, if you're sparging with distilled water, that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, the malts in the mash are going to, you know, as soon as that distilled water hits, the malts are going to buffer that down and right. the pH isn't going anywhere. It's when you're sparging with highly alkaline water that you get, like in northern Minnesota, Texas, Utah, you know, a couple places, heavy limestone stone areas, that you need to be concerned about the pH of the mash during the sparge and tannin extraction and such. But if you're building water from distilled, you can sparge with distilled water without a care in the world. Mm-hmm. All you want to do is say, I've got, you know, X gallons of water where I have my Dortmunder profile and, you know, in the mash, and that's going to the kettle. And I've sparged with, you know, say 5 gallons of water into the kettle. I just need to make up that 5 gallons that I added to the kettle and put mineral into that so that the beer coming out of the boil, when you go to the fermenter, is roughly or is the total profile that you wanted, mm-hmm. minus evaporation.
So you're talking limestone country, then you're talking cave country, and a lot of the I guess Tennessee and Missouri and Arkansas, places like that, have some good cave country.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
So they would be affected as well, and. You know, one of the things, on the sparge water, distilled, but you could also do like a 50-50, you know, distilled in your tap water and get yourself in the middle range, and then that's fine as well. You're not going to run into a problem there either. And it's cheaper for people, you know, buying distilled water or, you know, making your own or RO. You know, as long as you got a lot of water you can waste, RO is actually pretty cheap to make yourself. But you know, a lot of I think what you did here is brilliant, because I think you're pointing out the difference in four very similar beers as far as the recipes go for Czech Pils, Munich Helles, German Pilsner, and a Dortmunder. They're not that far off, but they're right. Four very distinct styles, and a big part of that, I think, is water profile, like you're saying. I think that's really accentuates that. Now, the fact is that most people are really concerned about brewing things like IPA, something like an English bitter, or a barley wine or a bigger beer like that. Probably one of the most common things would be IPAs and ESBs and stuff like that. I'll tell you what. Let's take a short break, and that'll give you a chance to think about how do you really craft the proper water for an English IPA, American IPA, or an ESB. We'll be back after this.
Keep your carboy cap on. This is Brew Strong. We'll be right back.
Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Cut hours off your brewing sessions by using one of their 11 varieties of famous Williams malt extract. Their Williams German Pils is mashed with pure German Moravian two-row barley malt for a light blonde color and malty Christmas you just can't get from other extracts. Or check out their unique fermenters, draft beer equipment, bottling aids, and more. They even have their own line of precision hydrometers. Go to williamsbrewing.com to browse their vast selection and enter promo code BREW at the order checkout for $5 off your next order over $50. Orders placed by 3 p.m. ship the same day. Again, go to williamsbrewing.com and enter promo code BREW at checkout for $5 off your next order. Brewing is easy the Williams way.
Nico, listen, our lawyers said that we had to do this for 1 hour, and after this, we don't have to talk to each other for 3 more months until the next meeting.
Kids. Come on, let's get out of here.
I'm supposed to have more lines. I'm the professional. Hey, it's Sully.
And I'm Nico.
And we opened the 21st Amendment 9 years ago at 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park, to make great beer and have a great time doing it.
That's right, because to us, the 21st Amendment is more than just the right to make beer. It's the right to experiment, to be innovative, and just do things differently. And so now, we're putting our craft beer in cans.
That's right, cans. You can find our world-famous Heller High Watermelon Wheat Beer and Brew Free or Die IPA throughout California and Alaska.
And now it's also available on draft at select accounts in the Bay Area.
So next time you're at your local neighborhood pub or good beer store, be sure to ask for 21st Amendment in cans.
Because everyone likes it in a can.
Tasty crack cans.
Tasty crack cans.
Okay, from a double IPA has an ABV of 7.5 and a clarity of brilliant. So that's a +8. I pour it.
Sorry, looks like she found it unpalatable.
Ha!
Shut up, dog.
My creek gets a +10 versus girls because it's a fruit beer.
You can't open the bottle, and she walks over to the guy with the Pinot Grigio.
This sucks!
Ugh, I hate it when Greg's the brewmaster.
What's this? Non-Alcoholics Anonymous?
Dude, get out of here. We're in the middle of a brew session.
Is that an actual beer?
Yeah. I crafted it. I don't really use the dice anymore. I'm a 10th level beer nerd.
Are you a 10th level beer nerd? Have you ever been called upon to explain why it's named India Pale Ale? Do you burp Y Yeast 3522 and Crap Cascade? Then you're in good company at Northern Brewer. Northern Brewer has all your beer nerd needs, ingredients, equipment, and knowledge 24 hours a day at northernbrewer.com. Plus, fast, cheap shipping, only $7.99 for the contiguous USA. And check out Northern Brewer's huge selection of dorky beer kits, including the Tongue Splitter.
I've got Twi-Hop stuck in my braces.
And the Bourbon Barrel Porter.
Now on tap in the Mos Eisley Cantina.
Make 10th level at northernbrewer.com.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew strong.
All right. Waterganza part three. And we're trying to get to the IPA, ESB, that sort of category.
Yeah.
What I want to brew a great ESB. I want you know, Fuller's, Bass, various great English bitters.
Right.
And I hear Burton on Trent. And I go to my homebrew shop. They get the Burton water salts. They get the 5-2. They get all this stuff. But any of those, it really depends on the fact that I'm trying to brew an ESB and the water I'm starting with. I mean, help me out here, John. How do I go about this? What are my steps? What I look at, and then what do I do?
Okay. Well, you know, take Burton on Trent is a benchmark. You know, you hear that it's a high hardness water with a lot of sulfate, high permanent hardness kind of thing. So, you know, you can safely say, okay, I'm going to be adding, you know, a lot of gypsum to the beer. But, you know, and we're building this from distilled, right? Rather than say, building from a kind of a medium water.
Yeah, sorry, I was having some shatastic here.
Okay.
Right. Well, both.
Okay. Let's start it with building from distilled then.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So if you're going to build from distilled, if you simply dumped calcium sulfate into that mash, you know, you're going to get calcium, you know, up to say 100 parts per million because you want. Yeah, you want a decent, you know, 100, 150. You want a decent calcium level in there to go after the high mineral character of Burton or London. But if you did that alone, you'd have the calcium, you'd have the sulfate, but you would have a very low residual alkalinity, something that's, you know, good for brewing extremely pale beer. But not so good for brewing the copper colored, you know, the deep ambers that you often see in an ESB.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would recommend there is adding an equal amount of chalk to your mineral addition to your mash. So add say 4 grams of chalk and 4 grams of gypsum.
And this is for a 5-gallon, 18-19-liter batch, right?
Right, yeah. Assuming mash, assuming like a 10-54 beer,
mm-hmm.
And 1.5 quarts per pound,
mm-hmm.
that gives you about 11.5 pounds of malt and a mash water volume about 4.5 gallons. About 4 to 5 grams each of chalk and gypsum will give you, it looks, according to my spreadsheet, about 190 parts per million of calcium, about 180 parts per million of bicarbonate. And that balances to give a residual alkalinity of 6, which gives you a beer, a recommended beer color in the 6 to 11 range.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, right in there for an ESB.
Mm-hmm.
Now, ESBs are known for the strong, you know, bitter character of the hops, you know, that punching through the heavy malt or the, you know, heavier malt, to say something like a Pilsner style. And so you're looking at about 200 parts per million of sulfate there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much all you need for that style of beer.
But I think that, you know, you're saying that's all you need, but I get the sense from you that, you know, you don't want to just go with, you know, adjusting the sulfate and being done with it for distilled water. It's more complex than that.
Yeah.
You know, the mineral profile of a water and some of those subtle other little compounds in there tend to have an effect on the overall character of the beer. Is that not correct?
Right. That is correct. So So far, we've taken care of the calcium and the sulfate. But as we noted, you know, the ESP is also known for a nice round malt character. It's got some crystal in it, a little bit, some toast character from toast malt or victory malt. Uh-huh. And, so to accentuate that, you could back off the calcium, the gypsum a little bit and, or the chalk and say fill in with some calcium chloride, uh-huh. Get your chloride count up. Uh-huh. You could also use table salt to do that, but I think you got to play with the numbers on the spreadsheet to get and look at the profile that you get. But you're looking for decent calcium levels, decent chloride levels to give you some malt character accentuation. But again, that calcium the chloride to sulfate ratio is still important to the perception of the beer and the style of beer.
Okay. Now, let's say you're trying to do that same ESB, but you're starting with water in the, you know, kind of in the mid range, like we were talking earlier. That's okay. Fairly common as far as let's go with the average across the country versus some of the higher end areas.
Sure. Our water here in Los Angeles is probably a good example of that. It's kind of a medium alkalinity. Calcium is about 40 parts per million. Bicarbonate is around 100. I think it's about 100. Let's see.
Dead just bodies, 50 parts per million.
Yeah, let me look at a quick profile here and give you some numbers. Yeah, the alkalinity is about 114. Calcium is around 68. Mm-hmm. Magnesium's 27, chloride is 90. So you know it's a good kind of middle of the road,
okay.
Pale ale water. If I wanted to Burtonize this, what's my sulfate here? Sulfate, well, sulfate's actually already at 244. So.
Now, but it's the ratio that's most important, right?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm looking at a chloride to sulfate ratio of chloride 90 to 244. So this is already on the heavy on the sulfate side.
Mm-hmm.
And
too heavy?
Yep. Well, not, I wouldn't say too heavy, but it's probably adequate to the task.
It's about two and a half to one.
Yeah, uh-huh. I would say to modify this for good ESB, the calcium level is only at about 68, so there's some room there to add to that. I would say add calcium chloride to this water. Uh-huh. Bring up the calcium to about 100 parts per million, 150 parts per million. Bring up the chloride to, say, 150 or even 200 parts per million. The ratio is still, you know, on the sulfate side, but now we're giving that malt character some more support,
mm-hmm.
and to help you know fine tune that beer.
Okay, now same water, I want to brew a dry stout.
Ah, okay. You're not really looking for sulfate in a stout.
Uh-huh.
You're looking for some background bitterness, but it's not a punchy bitterness.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking for more of a balance to chloride to sulfate, or maybe even a little more to the chloride side, depending on what type of, you know, what your preference in the stout is. I would, but it, you know, this water, this good medium pale ale water, if you brew a stout, especially a strong stout, with that, you're probably going to end up with kind of a one-dimensional roast character, because the dark malts and the stout, again, depending on how strong you make it, are going to drive that pH a little low, a little bit too acidic, and that's going to result in a little bit of acridness to that beer. And frankly, I've tasted this beer all over the country. You go to a brew pub. You have their pale ale. They got their pale ale, their brown ale, and they've got their stout. And the pale ale and the brown ale are good because you're working with kind of average water around the country. You try the stout, and it's got kind of a one-dimensional roast character. And you say, ah, yeah, that's the stout. I've had this before. I like it or I don't like it, you know, but they're often the same. We did at the National Homebrewers Conference in Denver a couple years ago, did a real neat experiment with a couple of guys there. Gosh, they blank on their names. Scott and Drat. Sorry, guys. Should have had this in front of me. What we did was we brewed two beers with pale ale water and brewed two beers with water that had been generated from distilled for stouts. And we brewed a pale ale and we brewed a stout, and then we switched the waters and brewed them again. So we had four beers to taste at the conference. When we brewed the stout with the stout water, we had and this was a water that had a residual alkalinity of about 200 parts per million residual alkalinity. The beer color that we calculated using Mosher was about 46, and I used a variety of very dark malts, extra special roast from Breeze and black malt and roast barley. I mean, it was quite a dark beer. But the neat thing was, when you brewed that beer with a high bicarbonate water that had the right RA, you could taste and smell each of the individual malts that we had used in that beer. They all blended together, and you could pick them out, and there was a wonderful complexity to that beer. When you brewed that beer with pale ale water that didn't have the supporting alkalinity for those dark malts, now you got a one-dimensional roast beer. It was still a well-brewed beer. It was still a beer that was easy to drink. They had done a good job brewing it, but it lacked the complexity of the other beer. So that's how changing the water can affect your beer flavor.
And again, I think that's what you pointed out so eloquently in the first of the Water Ganza episodes, that here's the difference between a really good beer and just freaking outstanding. I mean, when you put the two side by side, same recipe, same great brewing technique, but yep, here's the little thing that puts it over the top. Now, I don't encourage people to go hog wild on water adjustments until they've really worked out a lot of the other basics in the process. It's a thing that really does make a difference, but
you've got to have your fermentation rock solid first.
Don't think adjusting your water is going to make the difference in is going to make up for poor sanitation or poor fermentation. You got to have those processes down. But I really do think John, you've done an excellent job of really filling in. Giving us an education from, I use water when I brew to, all right,
I know how to brew with water.
Yeah, and water is one of the components that I'm using and I'm adjusting and I'm using to make the best beer possible. And, I hope that we've, or especially John has done a great job of, educating everybody and answering all these questions. I think we probably covered a good 80%. I think there's always 20% out there that we need to hit. And, you can always email rock@thebrewingnetwork.com. And that's going to reach my buddy Rock, John Palmer. He can answer a lot of those questions. But what I encourage everyone to do is not just ask John for their questions to calculate their water for them, but to ask them questions about, to learn the process. Not to have somebody do it for you, but to have him,
Thought processes that go into making these decisions for yourself.
Exactly. I mean, the education, and then, John, I think, once you collect, 50 or 100 of these, let's put another show together and Water Ganza Part 4 we'll put together, and we'll answer all those questions. And I think we'll have a nice full education for people as far as that goes.
That'll be a good idea. Yeah, yeah.
Justin, we got any questions from the chat? for this part of the show?
We do. A couple quick questions. What's the best acid to use to adjust mash pH? Is there a best acid?
Well, it depends on what style you're working with and so on.
I use lactic.
Phosphoric and lactic are readily available at homebrew shops.
Okay.
Realize that you're taking calcium out of solution if you use phosphoric. Mm-hmm. Realize that you can potentially add flavor using lactic.
I would say this also, John, that if the amount you need to add is going to exceed 1 mil per gallon of batch, right? You're making a 5 gallon batch or a 18 liter batch, and you're adding more than a mil or two of lactic acid to the mash, you're going to start to taste it. But yeah. In that range, you can get away with it. You can go a mil or 2 mils, and it'll be all right. But if you get it past that, it's going to start tasting sour just to adjust that pH. So you might want to cut your water with some distilled and try again, or build the water up from distilled.
Yeah.
Okay. And likewise, what chemical then is best for adding calcium?
You got a choice. You got calcium sulfate. You've got calcium carbonate. You've got calcium chloride. Each of them has their role depending on which style you're trying to brew. If you're trying to brew a stout, then use the chalk, the calcium carbonate, because you need the carbonates to balance the dark malts. At the same time, while getting some calcium for good fermentation health. Mm-hmm. If you're brewing a pale lager, then you're probably going to want calcium chloride and gypsum. If you're brewing a pale ale, you're probably going to want the calcium sulfate, the gypsum, over the calcium chloride or the calcium carbonate. Depends on style.
Excellent answer, John.
Okay. And then
I love that answer.
A follow-up to that and a final question from the chat is, would adding calcium chloride contribute to some off flavors due to the chloride?
No, it shouldn't.
Okay.
So chloride, not the same as chlorine.
Okay. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. And also, when you start looking at a spreadsheet, and I don't care whether you're using ProMash or my spreadsheet or Tom's or there's lots of brewing software out there, you're not adding that much. You're adding, a few 5 grams maybe, to a 5 gallons of water. If you're adding spoonfuls, you're adding too much. This isn't the kind of thing where you stand with the tin next to your and a spoon next to your mash and just start ladling it in, waiting for the pH to change. That's going about it the wrong way. You should calculate it out. It should be on the order of 5 grams or less. You've added in, stir, wait. 5, 10, 15 minutes, you should see a response in the mash. Check it with meter, check it with paper.
Here's a question for you, John. Last question. Now we're calling it water gans are done. in the accuracy of measuring, how accurate do you need to be? I've got the triple beam, which I've used to measure various powdered substances before. And, do I need that kind of accuracy, or do I need, the grain scale I have will measure just in grams? And is that close enough?
That's close enough. I use a postage scale. I just, I think it does have tenths on there, but being an engineer, I know not to rely on tenths. I mean, if it goes to a tenths place, I'm only counting on an accuracy of plus or minus a half a gram. Mm-hmm. I'm rounding. If it says 8.3, well, I know that's probably close to 8. Mm-hmm. Or 8.5 maybe. Don't
freak out over about it.
Right.
Whatever you do, try and be reproducible. This is the thing we stress on the show is, you know, try and, you know, make your process reproducible. So if you're going in and, you know, the calculations tell you you need 8 grams and you do 8 grams and it doesn't taste quite right, if you are good in all your other processes, temperature control and fermentation and yeast pitching rates and yeast health and all that, and you're doing a good job of all that, you know, if 8's not right, you adjust it down to 7 or 6 or 9 or 10. And then see what the result is there, and then you know it's not a factor of all these other things.
Right.
You know, you can really dial it in that way, and it really doesn't matter what the numbers exactly say. The numbers are a starting point for you, as a brewer, as an artist, to kind of dial in the rest of the recipe and the process, and make your adjustments. And that's why reproducibility is so important. Anything
excellent
else to
point.
Add, John?
No, that's an excellent wrap up.
Okay. Well, I think that's it. I think that's our Water Genza. Many thanks to morebeer.com, who sponsor this show and keeps us in condoms and blow and you know, all the other things we need. And, well, and brewing supplies. That's actually what they keep us in. So I think it's another great show. Another show coming up, Can You Brew It? Coming up opposing Mondays, and we're going to be covering Lagunitas. We're actually going to have a Lagunitas Genza! 3 Lagunitas beers, including the IPA, which everybody wants to clone. We have the recipe from Lagunitas. No kidding. All right. So until then, visit our sponsors, visit the Brewing Network store, pick up a copy of John's seminal work, How to Brew.
And get Brewing Classic Styles to give you excellent recipes to brew all these different styles of beer.
Another good book. And it all goes to support the Brewing Network. Until then, brew strong.
Brew strong, everybody.